welcome to Paint Ed. PCA provides painting contractors with connections they need to grow their business. To find out more and to become a member, go to pcapainted.org. Find more great content like this on PCA Overdrive. A subscription to the platform is included with membership. For all you non-members out there, sign up for our free trial. PCA Overdrive is available on the Apple Store and Google Play. In today's podcast, we feature an episode from Ask a Painter Live with Nick Slavik. In this episode, Nick talks with Tom Drost, founder of Estimate Rocket, about sales planning and getting more work, and how to do that using a strategic vision.
Happy Wednesday. Normally we do this on Saturday morning so people can join us there, but I will be traveling for a master's class later on, and I wanted to make sure that everything was set up and I was stationary for Tom Drost of Estimate Rocket this week. We are going to talk, I'm sure there's going to be numbers, I'm sure there's going to be data, I'm sure there's going to be feeling, and this is not one that I'm going to be walking through an airport on my phone trying to do. I want my data, and I got my whole monitor set up here, I got my whole sales tracker set up here, Tom Drost, we are ready to go. So first off, I want to thank everybody for watching. Special edition, middle of the afternoon Wednesday show. Put this on in the background, paint away, do your thing. If you are interested in conversations like this, super nerdy conversations about estimates, sales, the inner workings, planning, things like that, business planning, the PCA is a wonderful place to find people like that. The Painting Contractors Association is near and dear to my heart. Their slogan is "We build better contractors." That's what we're trying to do here too. Tom's nodding his head. All we want to do is professionalize this industry. Nothing would make me happier. And people, this is sometimes a weird knee-jerk reaction, but when I have people, even in my war room for master's classes, or when we do a gathering of Minnesota painters where we have 40 local painters here, there's guys that I have seen on job sites. They have yard signs out there. The knee-jerk reaction in the industry is that is the enemy. Anybody with a mature mind in business and the craft will understand that no, you want people that are professionals like you out there. Because when you go to estimate, you want those people estimating with you. You want them to have all the data and things that Estimate Rocket can give you to be a professionalized company, know what to charge in order to afford all the insurance that comes with running a business like this and plan for profit. So I would much rather see all of my counterparts from Minnesota bidding on a job with me. That would make me so happy. Those counterparts and many others are in the Painting Contractors Association. It's a place where we go to better ourselves and others. And I can tell you this, summarize down. All the things that you think are these unsolvable problems, what do you charge for X? That's the biggest one I get. I'm sure, Tom, you've probably heard that a few times. This can be solved by a few things you can learn at the PCA and the people involved with the PCA. There is nothing you are being challenged with right now that somebody else hasn't solved. And they will often give you that answer for free all the time, and they will love helping you. So I would urge you, if you are interested in that, the PCA is the place for you. Also, if you guys want to join me for a master's class, talk about knowledge sharing. I'm opening my business. We're taking this stuff, all the things we talk about today. I open my business to you in front of you, and you can ask questions and we can open up everything I have and take a look at it in master's classes. And if you want to go visit one of the areas around the country where I'm doing that, there's a link here in the show to do that. And I'm not going to waste any more time because we got a heavy hitter on the show today. Tom is here from Estimate Rocket, and I know we're going to go deep in many, many things. I'm sure I will be challenged in many ways I've never been challenged before. So that was a lot of words right away. Thank you for joining me.
Absolutely a pleasure. Pleasure to be here, Nick. I'm really excited to do this. Just a little background on me. I'm the founder of Estimate Rocket. Started my professional life out as an accountant, and personal computers were a thing then, and dove into software very quickly to help businessmen and business people solve their problems. And in the last 5 years, our team's grown Estimate Rocket out of several small clients that we started with to over 4,000 users. It's a really exciting time for us. And we're committed as a company to provide technology support and education to service contractors to help them thrive professionally and personally, because you need the whole package. And one of the beauties of what we have the opportunity to do in terms of being entrepreneurs and running entrepreneurial businesses is to help a lot, not only ourselves and our families, but our the people around us and the people in our communities to thrive as well. And I think that's a really important part. But it takes us succeeding first to help build that up. And I know you're a big part of that. And one of the things that we're working on is a vision conference that's coming next month. And basically, it's going to be about sales planning and profit planning and about a little bit about sharing your vision for what your company is. And I think it's a critical thing. And I didn't understand how critical it was. And I've had businesses for many years until a couple of years ago in the vision part. Planning, yeah, I've always done all that. The accounting bean counter thing won't let me stop doing it. But the vision piece where you communicate all that to the people that are on your team is so critical, and having methodologies for that and a way to do that is really not only critical to your success, but to your whole crew and team success. It's really exciting to be able to share that stuff. So
it's an amazingly simple, no duh thing that changed my life years ago when somebody basically presented me with the idea that, hey, listen, you should have a vision for your company. It's like, yeah, whatever. I want to be a $1 trillion company. Yeah, okay. But when somebody said, no, you're not hearing me. Set a big goal out in the future and work your way back so that you can figure out what you need to do today to get you on the path for that. And it's like, of course you would do that. Don't just set this crazy goal in the future and then just say, well, I'm just going to work as hard as I can and hopefully by God we'll get there. Like, no, real visioning and real planning is 10 years from now, I want to be here. You back that all the way up to this day, and that thing changed my life.
Yeah, it really does.
And if people want to join you for the visioning conference, where can they do? Where can they go?
There's going to be a link in the comment section that'll have a little sign up link for anybody who's watching, and they'll be on our website on October 1st. We'll start officially taking registrations for it, but the link should be posted down there today in the comment section. So we're very, very excited about it.
So you have to be intentional about visioning. If you were to look, I have one screen right here with my Google Calendar up, and there is a little spot every day, that last hour of every day, and then Friday mornings for visioning. And if we're not intentional about it, just like your vision, if you're not working on your vision, you're not going to get there. And if you don't take the time to create that vision, working hard and hoping for a great future is not good enough. You got to be intentional about it. So yeah, it's every single person. And these things are always big ask, right? When I ask people to go to a master's class, a visioning conference, a PCA expo, it's a big ask.
Right.
I've never once talked to a human that got done with one of those and said, complete waste of time.
Right.
You know, I've also never talked to a human who said, eh. Every single person I talk to that does one of these things, they're like, oh my God, that was worth taking 10 days off. Absolutely. Right. Because you just need to do that.
Yeah, you got to realize you're not alone. I think is probably one of the biggest takeaways from those sessions is you hear and see other people and they're talking about the same things you are, like, oh my God, there are actually other people that have my same problems. So, amen, you know, and man, that's just so valuable. And if you take, most of those things, if you take one actionable item away from one of those 2 or 3 day sessions, you've paid for it easily. You don't have to learn a million things. You just got to find one thing that you take away from each one that's like, okay, I'm going to go back Monday morning. People in the office are going to think I'm absolutely, you know, batshit crazy, but they're going to go, oh my God, what a great idea. Why didn't we do that before?
So, it's hilarious. I actually took out this morning, I have this, my wife bought me a beautiful Japanese notebook. And it was one of those things where I said, this will be the thing now that I'm involved in the industry, like 6 years ago, every time I go to an event, I'm going to write down the date, take all my notes. I still have that. And I still use that 6 years later. I can look back to every event I ever went through and you should see the first one, frantic handwriting, right? Like it was just all over the place. It's that fire hose stuff that everybody talks about. I'm standing there and info is just coming at you 1,000 miles an hour. And I left. At the end of my first like event with other people, commiserating together, learning together, I was like, I'm an utter failure. Nothing I've done is good. How could I ever win at this? There's so much to do. I look back at that now. I've completed almost everything. All those little things that said, must do this, must do that. Eventually, if you just set that goal, right, work on it incrementally, I look back at that stuff. Like sometimes I've reiterated 6 or 7 times on that thing, right, improving. So it is, it's a slow process, but it's a good process, Tom, right?
Yeah. Yeah. After that first session, I'm sure every item on the page had a big asterisk on it too.
Oh man, it's so interesting. You know, when I first got introduced to job costing, I was like, what is this magical job costing? I'm going to have to hire an accountant and they can be my job coster. And then you're like, oh, and now it's like, that's my life. You know, all I do is dwell in it and the intricacies of it. And, right, but it's so funny to see the immature version of myself 6 years, sure, ago now after this. So
yeah, but as you said, the key is doing it incrementally and making a plan for it and being intentional, and it works. And you just, everything's incremental. Nothing happens, you know, there's no instant successes. There's instant 10-year successes.
So Tom, I get, beside number one, I mean, ask a painter, right? So mm-hmm. I'm a lightning rod for questions. One of the biggest things is, what do you charge for X? Mm-hmm. The second biggest thing is, will Estimate Rocket help me?
Yeah.
What is the value proposition for a painting contractor for sure. Estimate?
There's a lot. The main value proposition is to be able to, and this doesn't sound like the right one, but it's to be able to get quality estimates out rapidly, because every contractor in the world gets whacked for not getting back to people on a timely basis. And a lot of cases, the guy who wins is the guy who's first. And that's not necessarily good. And again, it's all an incremental process. So responding to that, responding to people, the fact that it follows things up automatically for you once you've delivered your proposal, and it makes it very easy to do a proposal. I'm not saying there isn't any work up front. Anything that's worthwhile takes a little up front. But once you can deliver those proposals almost instantly and have them followed up with, then you can go on and work on some of the other things that you need to do. And then once you get them, you can do your job costing, you can do your tracking and invoicing and the other things that you need to do to watch your profitability as you're going through the course of the project. So actionable, I think maybe actionable information might be the value proposition.
Yeah, actionable information is insanely more valuable than people will know. That scientific process of, you know, doing an experiment, controlling the variables, getting feedback, and then changing something again, that's it. You can be looking at your jobs in real time and adjust your pricing in the matter of days and weeks to all of a sudden become more profitable. Getting that stream of data is so important.
Yeah. And little things matter. I mean, when you start looking at things like, everybody thinks, oh, I got to do a huge price increase. No, you don't. You know, small regular price increases are, nobody even knows you're doing them, and you're just keeping current and actually making enough money to make your business successful.
It's interesting you say that, because I did a thought experiment with people that sometimes people have not crunched the numbers. So I did this weird experiment where I created a magical 4-crew painting company with mm-hmm. 8 painters. And I basically was trying to prove the theory that there's no small losses and no, you know, little things like that.
Right.
You basically take all 4 crews clicking on cylinders, great, 15 to 20% profit. If you have one that barely covers their own, you will lose 2/3 of the profit for the entire company based on one crew that kind of doesn't do that well. So they pay for themselves. You can say, well, listen, 1 out of 4, they're just paying for themselves. You just gave up 2/3 of the profit for your entire company. So those are really interesting sort of numbers to crunch like that. And when you're getting that feedback from jobs, you can start looking at that.
Right. And especially when it's actionable, there's one thing, looking at stuff at the end of the year is useful for planning purposes, but being able to see things as they happen or immediately after they've happened so that you can adjust immediately before the next job or the next job, that's really critical and can save you so much loss by getting ahead of it instead of waiting the end of the year and going, oh. Jim Kalutis is one who's talked a lot about that process of, shit, I got to the end of the year and I thought I was making money and I lost money because you didn't have any window into it during the process.
Yeah, really. That's hilarious, because most guys, it's funny to track this on social media where you see the arc of the year where, right. you know, coming into, you know, November and December when guys are getting towards the end of the year right. and they're we're killing it. It's just been an awesome year.
Right.
The second they start tax prepping, they have to come face to face with some very immovable numbers. And then all of a sudden, crisis time. What are we doing? How did this happen? What happened to me? When you job cost your business once a year, that is a problem. You need to do it a little sooner than that. So
yeah, you have to, unquestionably.
And yep. So one of the main things we wanted to talk about today was planning.
Sure, definitely.
In what regard, as opposed, you know, with you, with Estimate Rocket, everything else, what do we need to be thinking about planning?
First of all, everybody plans a little differently, no matter who you are, you know, and there's not necessarily any wrong answers, but we've got to take a look at where, you know, how we got where we are now, you know, how did some retrospective things about, okay, what happened last year? What did we do good? Well, what did we do poorly? What's going on in the market? I love your expression, by the way, data and feelings, because it is a combination of both. You got to have some data, but then you got to, you know, do you, what you're an entrepreneur, you got to use the gut that says, okay, this is where I think it's going, and yeah. you know, throw the dice. And then you have to figure out what are your metrics? What are the things you're going to try to measure and keep track of? You know, so there's kind of a general process that I use for Estimate Rocket, which is similar, but probably different than, you know, because we're not in the business of selling hours. And most painting companies and most service contractors in general are in the business of selling hours. So that becomes a really critical component of it, where our business metrics are a little bit different than that. So, that's one of the reasons I wanted to get some insight into how you go about your planning process, because again, everybody has different, you know, outlooks and ways they go about it. And I think, and they're all important and they're all right, but it's always good to listen to others to say, hey, these are the things I look at in my keys, because you go, that's interesting.
Well, Tom, I had one of the funnest last 12 months. We passed this really interesting threshold of professionalization where I even made my own list of like the 11 things I need to do to professionalize. And we've kind of crossed over into number 11. Now that number 11 is a lifelong thing. The 1 through 10 is like, you can get this done now. So I'm not done by any means. what's really cool is that, you know, you can plan. You know, I had a 3-year plan that we wanted to basically triple the size of the company.
Right.
And so you start getting out the knowns, like, here's how much I think an estimator and a production manager can do. Here's how much right. I think a painter can do. We grew about 50% the next year. And over the last 12 months, I had an estimator do most of the estimating, and we got a bunch of data back. And the cool piece of data was he was selling twice the amount of work that I budgeted him for. So now you have this data and you put it in there. Now that changes your plan, and you kind of redo your plan like that.
Right.
And so when we talk about like sales planning and estimate planning, that threw a big wrench in it, because I was always under the belief that an estimator should sell a million, a production manager should manage a million, and a painter should, you know, paint $100,000. So you got 10 right. painters, production manager, estimator, $1 million business unit.
Yeah.
The data I got back from the company are 10 painters, $1.2, $1.3 million. Yeah. A production manager can manage 1.7, and a salesperson can sell 2. So now we got that to deal with. So, right. so then when we look to the future, yeah, then we can start playing with those very, and again, that's people specific. Somebody might do something else, but now it's like, now we got this great data. Now we can change a plan.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, you have to, because you've got, you already have more capacity than you think you do once you realize that. And that's the old, that's another, you know, getting your team together is really key in the whole planning process too, because if they don't know it and don't know what's expected, when you put those, when you say, oh, you know what, here's our goal for this year, they're going, what I did, you know, how are we going to do that? But you've got the data to show them, like, hey, you know what, guys, we can already do this, and we can grow more. We can do more for us as a company. We can expand. And, you know, there's just great things that come out of it. You know,
one of the most interesting things that we did that actually, I believe, spiked production and quality was putting, instead of just saying, hey, you know, it's a business maxim to say everybody's got a number, everybody's got a KPI, what's yours? I was like, well, I gave my estimator a KPI and he doubled it. So if I keep that KPI, that's bad. But also if we give him that, I mean, he is legitimately out there doing the Lord's work, doing wonderfully. If I put it at double, I want to make sure he's still getting the reward from it. So What we did was a series of the minimum goal and a high goal, like a reach goal. So now Everybody in the company actually has two KPIs. Like, here's the keep your job number, and Here's the what we really want you to do. And that's actually been super effective. And if, you know, after you do it, you're just like, well, of course that makes more sense, You know, because people are going to overperform. Some people are underperform. And yeah.
The system we use actually has a color coding. It has red, yellow, green, and super green.
Yes.
Same idea though, right? You know what you're, this is what's in a great world. This is what you do. If it's super green, man, you're crushing it and life is great. If it's yellow, hey, let's talk. We got to figure some stuff out. If it's red, you know, we're in deep doo-doo. So we really got to figure out what's going on. But it gives you that indicator as you go along.
We are a couple dangerous minds here because I have my whole sales tracker in front of me and there is green and there is red. I don't have super green. That's something I have to, I got to change the conditional formatting on this stuff. Estimator Andy's going to get in super green this next year. I love this.
Yeah. And then the other important thing about that is when the people that are on your team see that, it's really powerful because they're like, yeah, I crushed it. I went above and beyond and hey, then they start knowing the sky's the limit and they can do whatever, they can achieve pretty much anything.
And what you're saying in a very soft way is basically accountability, you know, People seeing their numbers and other people seeing them is a very important thing. And if you look at the profitability of my company and the increased percentages over the last couple of years, the biggest jump in overall true net profit came from accountability. So the numbers are just data plus feelings, right?
Right.
The data is there, but if nobody sees it, that doesn't do any good, you know? So it's when you apply the accountability and people know that Monday morning, they're going to either say they're on track or off track with their number.
Right.
And then they're going to have to give you a reason why if they're off track. So,
Yeah. That's the beauty of the account, and the accountability systems are really the key, and, you know, appropriate meeting rhythms and meeting agendas are just, and again, I've never been a huge fan of meetings, but if meetings are structured well and they have a good point, you're not, you know, it's not, once people understand that the whole process is not to beat anybody up, it's to find out what's, you know, when there's problems, what are we doing wrong? And when things are going great, what are we doing right? You know, what do we want to do more of, double down on?
Yep. And I always remind business owners, you know, number one, never have a punitive relationship with anybody you work with. But number two, guess what? There's only one person in charge of payroll in that company. And if you are even half a day late with a check, you will be held accountable. So don't. Accountability goes both ways. There is ultimate accountability with payroll, and rightly so. But don't, humans do better with accountability. I do better with accountability. We all do.
We all do, for sure. Yeah,
being lenient and letting people slide and not holding them accountable is not helping them at all.
Right. And all it doesn't help the team.
Doesn't help the team either. So talk about, so sales and estimate planning. As we're aggressively growing a company, how do you think about, oh my God, how many estimates do we need? How many estimators? How many do I have to close? How much are we going to have to pay for? How can you start taking the whole world of how are you even supposed to know what this is and bringing it down into something where you can actually plan, like a number?
Yeah. I mean, having the tracking systems in place obviously is key. I know in Estimate Rocket, for example, we know, we can tell you how many new projects came in, i.e. leads. We can tell you how many estimates you've done. We can tell you how many estimates got accepted, average values, and those kinds of things. So those give you the tools that you need to put together for it. And then when you get to the forecasting side, it's a matter of saying, well, this is what we did. This is how many estimates we needed to close this many deals. This is how many leads we needed to do this many estimate rockets. Because each one has a falling percentage. So 100 leads might lead to 50 estimates, might lead to, you know, 35 jobs or more, depending upon your closing ratio. But having access to that data gives you those numbers to say, hey, good, we're closing at X percent. So this is what we need if we're going to raise it this much. But there's other factors in there too. So in some cases, you if you look at if you're keeping up with everything, then that extra volume will probably be what you need. But if you, let's say you skipped price changes last year and you didn't increase your prices at all, well, some of that growth may come simply from a price increase and you don't even need to do any more jobs. And so maybe it's a growth year. Maybe we're going to take on some new painters and train them and groom them and get them up to speed. So we might not grow quite as much in terms of projects done, but we might grow in terms of building our team, but increasing the revenues based on a cost and price increase. So there's different ways to, you know, to grow.
And it's been really fun. You know, again, I'm always like, you know, respect the data. I got that, you know, that's a motto of a great friend of mine in the industry. He actually has it up on a wall in his office in a big, big mural. You know, like data never lies. Data is perfect. I always follow the data, but it's like, you know what? There's a lot of variables in that. You can pull some levers and that's right. Things can change depending on that. So Speaking about the data and the things, I've always been under the impression that total number of estimates accepted will give you a success ratio, right? Like how many estimates you close to how many you do.
Yeah.
You get an average weekly or whatever sales that you monthly that you track.
Yeah.
You track average job size. Yeah. What are those are kind of the big ones for me. What are there any ones that you think are very important?
Yeah, those are definitely the sales side variables. Those are the key ones. Leads is another important one too, because when you're growing, the number of new incoming, you know, new incoming projects, or call them leads, is you got to increase that, because the fact is that the number of estimates you do is not equal to the number of leads you got, because some people fall off. You get dead, you know, you get non-marketing qualified leads that come in and they're like, oh no, we don't want that. We're going to go to, you know, we're not going to pay that. We're not going to pay your prices. I'm going to go get some cheap guy who doesn't know anything, and then I'll pay him again next year to do the same thing. So you got to know, you do need to know your leads. Plus, lead generation is a big cost item. You know, you're going to either advertise, or you're going to join associations, or different things you're going to put yourself out there for. So that's a cost item, and that's a cost item that's harder to track in some ways than some of the things post lead. It gets pretty tight, because you know what your crew is and what you're paying, what your costs are for that, and you know your stats very well. But marketing is one of those mythical beasts, I think, where it's really hard to attribute, you know, I know this job came from that source. So when you can, it's great. And we also do source tracking for leads so that you can see, okay, here's our closing ratio by lead source. That's another key, or by area or whatever. Areas are important.
It's been a crazy, like, behavioral psychology/economics experiment that I've been on for like 5 years now, because all of my leads come through my website, and I do try to track my marketing very closely.
Right.
I've been manipulating the form that people fill out to try to create a maze where people will actually give me accurate data. It's getting better every year, but I know that somebody from, you know, somebody will say they heard about me in a newspaper, and it's like, I only advertise in my hometown and you're an hour away. I know you didn't get that newspaper. Why did you click that? You had to go through my drop-down menu and you had to actually burn calories to go to the bottom of the newspaper when you could have just hit word of mouth with just the first one. So It's like, it's a weird human experiment to try to be like, please just tell me accurate information.
Right.
And it's not for curiosity. It's because a business of my size will likely have a $75,000 marketing budget for the year. My God, can you burn that up in no time if it's like, done badly? It's like, it's just poof. And the worst part is, you don't have a pickup truck in your driveway when you're done with that. It could just be gone and you can't even point to it. You can't even justify it when you're done. So it's so important to at least get an idea. It will never be perfect. But it is different though. Interestingly enough, when I went to college, I had a marketing professor tell me 90% of all marketing is wasted. You just don't know which 90%.
Exactly.
And I think it's better now. It's still not perfect. It's still not 10% of your marketing is wasted, you know? So, but I think that was in the olden days of yellow pages and newspaper and stuff.
Yeah.
But yeah, the spirit behind that is true, which is sometimes you can't really point to it. But one thing that I look for is basically you can say, you know, if you're trying to find, hey, 10% of my leads come in through this, so let's exploit that. And you're like, the most interesting thing for me is how many come in organically, just word of mouth referral, and how many do I pay for? And then we basically just look at, I just try to figure out that ratio. Is it 50-50, 60-40, give or take? Like, what do you, you know? And then I try to figure out that is a huge impact on my marketing budget.
Absolutely. Yep. Yeah. The dialing in on it is really a science. And there are a lot of things that you can do that don't cost marketing dollars. Well, they do cost marketing dollars. Content on your website, quality content, reading a great book right now, They Ask, You Answer, talking about, it was written by a guy who now is a marketing company, but he had a pool building company. And he went out and he started writing these articles addressing everything, like how much does a pool cost? And he wrote a blog article about how, you know, and he didn't actually put what a cost was or even an average cost. He just said there are a lot of things that affect your cost. And he listed out what they were and explained the details of it. And he said that stupid article, you know, and this was back in the early days of the SEO stuff. He said that article, you know, boosted his business by like 30%. And he just started writing an article about every concern that a customer would have. And all of a sudden he became like the number one hit for anything that asked about pool costs. So I shouldn't say all of a sudden. All of a sudden is a bad word. Over time, he became, you know, the source.
Well, and I think business owners, you know, as business owners and entrepreneurs, one of the biggest harmful things that can happen to us is the shiny thing syndrome or the grass is always greener syndrome, where you get distracted from a goal or a superordinate goal. And that truly is the death knell of what we do. Like we need to eye on the prize, long-term goal,
right.
Buckle down, use some grit, get the info and go.
Right.
And when I've seen this happen thousands of times where somebody gets on the painter internet, you know, as we congregate
right.
And they'll be, oh my God, I just got 6 months worth of business from TikTok. And then everybody throws their laptop in the air, creates a TikTok account, goes crazy with doing that. And it's just like, listen, the specific thing is not the thing you should be listening to.
Right.
What you should take away from that was any intentional effort will usually get a result. And it doesn't matter what you choose. If you were intentional about yellow pages and you went hard in yellow pages, you could probably drive a business from that too.
Right.
You know, it's what are you going to be consistent and intentional about?
Yeah. And that's why the planning process is so critical, because you got to look at those things and say, okay, we're going to try this. And it's not bad to try new things, but you need to think about them and make them part of your plan that says, okay, hey, that looks like an interesting opportunity area for us. Maybe it's a different type of work that you want to investigate. So you can, you know, put a feeler out, but don't necessarily change the whole, don't throw away all the stuff that's working really well and just dedicate yourself to something that you have nothing in, you know, think it through and test the waters and see how things work there. And then you could dedicate more and more resources to it if it's working, but you don't want to throw away a good thing. It's, I think the other thing you mentioned the other day was, you know, it's not the glamorous things that win and succeed. It's consistently doing the mundane routine things well.
You know, that's a very unsatisfying realization, because you want it to be the one mad, you know. I always have this, like, business owners have this fantasy of the theoretical stockbroker who found a magic stock tip and billions of dollars rain down from the sky. And it's a hack. You found a way in, you exploited some glitch in the matrix. And it's right. Like, my God, is this industry the farthest thing away from that? There's not a magic piece of coding, any of that stuff. There's not a magic place to find all the employees. There's not a magic paint. We all do the same stuff. We all have access to it. Yeah. Who's going to get up? Who's going to take that info, apply some grit and be consistent, you know?
100%.
So there's one quick question that came through on Facebook, and then I have a question for you, Mr. Gross. So Michael Schnabel, Nick, what's your sales number look like? We're doing $750K with no marketing, but feel we'll need to at some point. I'll grab your opinion here in a second, Tom. At about, when I was at about 500 to 600K in business, all the stuff came in just like they did. Word of mouth, referral, relationships. I felt like after 600K, I had to do stuff. And initially I put forth effort. I feel like you can solve marketing stuff with effort or money or both. Initially, obviously I put in effort, just do more stuff on social media, get your name out, volunteer for a whole bunch of community things. But really after about 800K to a million, you really got to pour some coals into marketing, because you're just not going to get enough organic leads. Or the worst part is you can't create leads. You're basically at the mercy of when and whoever, wherever that comes to you. If you have a good marketing plan, you can say, just like we do, we don't market all year. We only market in the 6 or 7 months over winter, and we pour the coals to it because there's a huge demand curve. There we go, like this, where summer, there's too much demand. In winter, there's not enough. So we money on that to hopefully curve that out like that. So, Tom, what if you could wave the magic wand over the painting industry and change something about painters? You interact with tons of painters. Mm-hmm. What is something we're bad at? What would you like to see us stop doing? What would you like to change about us as business owners?
I think more emphasis on profitability in the at the project management phase and at the estimating phase, because if you can get away without that for a while, but if you really want to grow, managing the profitability is really key. You mentioned you got that one person who's dragging a team down, that chews away at your profits. Well, your profits are what you use to finance and fund your growth. So being aware of those things and, you know, sometimes it can be trained. I mean, sometimes things like that can be, hey, this guy just really needs some training. Sometimes it's, he does not share our core values or he or she, and, you know, we're going to have, you know, going to free you up to pursue other opportunities because, you know, we're not thinking along the same lines. So I think it's really, it's just imperative that you get a grip on that early on in the process so that you do get the data and do have the numbers to really support yourself. And it's not that, it doesn't have to be complicated to do it.
So an interesting, another one of these interesting like thought experiments, and I don't know if this is a good trade or not. I like to push back a little bit once in a while because there's lots of things that I learn by arguing. So I try to let people know this before I start pushing back, but it's I feel I can really dig down. Yeah. One of the things I push back hard on is, you know, like you said, focusing on profitability. Mm-hmm. People, a larger painting company, industry benchmark, 15% true net profit. This is after you've paid your labor, after you paid for your paint, and after you paid yourself for the job you do. A true net profit is money you get as a reward for all the risk you take on with this stuff. It's not just your take-home pay. It makes the hair on the back of my neck stand up when people say, I'm just going to offer a 10% off discount this winter. It's like, well, your company's operating on a 15% true net profit. You just gave away 2/3 of your profit for that. Right. If everything goes well, now you have a slimmer margin. Right. The marketing, the benchmark marketing budget for a company over $1 million is about 3.5%. Some people do more, some people do less. Sure. So you could say, why not spend more 3.5% instead of give away 10% on something like that?
Right.
The specifics of it are not as important as the idea that you're readily giving away profit and you're assuming that you can trigger more jobs, trigger them when you want them and how you want them. Those three things, I've tried discounts in the past. Right. Every time I've given people discounts, I'd be like, okay, we got to fill December, 10% discount on everything. They all accept and they say, good, see you next August. That's when we want the painting done. And it's like, no, that is the most demand month ever. That's not what I assumed that you were going to do this now, and that is not the case. So, so yes, I am all in favor of, listen, I will gladly take whatever money, you know, if you have a theoretical $40,000 project and you want to give them a 10% discount, I would take that $4,000 and pour it into marketing instead of giving the job a discount every single time. So just the theory of just like being fast and loose with your profit, that's all the risk you're pouring into the company. That's your reward for it.
Totally. No, and the thing that goes along with that is that money that you pour into the marketing is aimed at getting more of the customers that aren't looking for a discount. Get more of the customers who are your bread and butter and are going to provide the types of jobs and the profitability on the jobs that your company needs to grow.
Oh, let's see. What didn't we talk about planning? Is there anything you really wanted to hit on that I didn't cover?
We got through a lot of it. I mean, there's, you know, there's a ton of variables, you know, and that's one of the things we help to lay out in Vision Conference for people is sort of a framework that they can use and grow on and expand on. But I think coming up with your structure is key. And as you said, you've taken time and you keep morphing it and modifying it. And that's part of the process. But getting, you know, some people don't have the business knowledge to know how to get there. And it's daunting initially. Because you have the skills and you're able to, you know, get out there and make some money. But in order to, you know, perpetuate that and really grow to the point where you don't have to, you know, do every brushstroke for the company or whatever your trade is, you've got to have that planning process that helps you to grow and know why you're getting there. And then the measurement piece, the accountability. But they're all steps. I mean, the first step is having a plan. And then you realize once you do the plan is, hey, I got this awesome plan. Did we succeed? Oh, we need some measurement tools for this now. It's all part of a process, but you got to get started. You got to dive in.
So the advice I always give people to take this whole world of all these things you need to do to professionalize, people like, well, I'm just starting off. What can I do? And what I want to do is lay out 110 steps. For like, hey, just start here and go there. But nobody's going to comply with that. That's daunting. So what I tell people, and please tell me if this is good advice or bad advice, but I tell them, for the love of God, start job costing.
Yeah.
Track materials and track labor. Even if you don't do anything with them, just even if it's on a paper estimate, write down how much dollars in material and how many hours it took you to do this project. You'll figure it out later. Just track it. It's the foundational piece of data. Is that good advice or bad advice?
That is awesome advice. The one caveat to that I would say is, but before you tell them that, make sure that they're actually doing their estimates and following up on them with the customers to close the deals.
Oh man. It's yeah. So what's interesting is that I always divide, like, to me, there's three big realms of things to focus your time on as like a solopreneur, paint business owner. There's the humanistic client side. Yeah. There is what I would consider the entry fee to be a professionalized business. You know, there's things like job descriptions, employee resource guide, you know, all the unsexy mundane stuff.
Yeah.
And then the third little thing is like vision. And if you spend all your time in vision and not taking care of clients or doing the mundane, unsexy stuff, it's going to be unbalanced. So really what you can do early on is pick something from the professionalization bucket, the unsexy bucket, always take care of your clients. That's the easy thing. Like early on, I had an insanely profitable version of my company when it was me and a couple people. We just worked as hard as we could. We gritted through it. We spent all our time on client care, very profitable, not scalable at all. So if we just wanted to dwell there, fine, no problem. But if we wanted to do that, we needed to keep the client service, work on the unsexy stuff. Yeah. Then we needed to start sprinkling in vision over the top. And it feels to me like you're exactly right. Mm-hmm. You can job cost all you want. If you never answer your phone, doesn't matter.
Right.
It doesn't
matter. Right. I got it dialed in. I just don't have any business. That's not going to help you.
Honestly, Tom, it would that there's so much wisdom in that, because this year I completely had a no shit moment when it was like, this is all humans.
Yeah.
It's just humans. If all you have to do is take care of the humans around you, whether they're clients, whether they're employees, make them happy, set them up for a win, devote yourself to them.
Yeah.
That is the thing we probably want to do least when I survey the industry, but it's the thing we should do the most. And I hate to say it's not about paint, because there's a hell of a lot of good painters out there and there's a hell of a lot of bad business owners out there. So good, focus on the paint, be a master craftsperson. But the human stuff, you got it. That's the key to win every time.
Yeah, I used to think it was really hokey when I, you know, people would ask me about, you know, what's your secret? What do you think is really important? And it does sound wicked cliche, but it's, you have to care, and you have to care about your customers, you have to care about the people on your team, your family, your community. You have to care about stuff. And if you care about stuff, then you're probably going to do a lot of the right stuff. And then to be really successful, you got to also put together the things that help you perpetuate that and you know, help the people around you grow as well.
If you genuinely care about people, you will automatically professionalize your company.
Right.
Because if you want these people to grow and thrive and have a great future, you need a pay scale, a job description, a way that you can track their metrics to win, a goal setting process, an estimating process so you can actually sell a profitable job so you're not screaming at them that they're not making any money for the business. So
exactly.
What you said, I would file under the column of, we all know it's true, but you don't really take it to heart until you get backed into a corner and you have to face reality and be like, no, it absolutely is true. You have to put a lot of meaning behind that. It's the people and you have to care.
Yeah. Some cliches are really the real deal.
Well, a cliche, a very meta cliche is it's cliche for a reason.
Yeah.
some cliches are cliches for a reason because they're absolutely true, you know?
Exactly. So,
Tom, what do we need to talk about that we have not talked about? Did I miss something?
I think we kind of covered it. I mean, the only other thing I would say is if there's any, you know, magic inputs or that you've come to up with for your planning process, that's really, really helps painters get to what they need to get to. You know, that is always helpful and not necessarily on the estimating side. Maybe it's on the production side or the job costing side, or, you know, there's so many different elements that go into it. It's a matter of picking the right one at the right time.
Well, you know, it's really interesting, and all credit to my apprentices and craftspeople in the field. They are out there doing the Lord's work. They care for our clients, just as highly as they practice the craft.
Yeah.
But we got to a point where, I had a super sneaky insight into the industry, because when COVID shut down, I was inviting people here in a safe way where we could actually go through job costing master's classes where people would actually bring in, you know, 3 to 5 of their own projects, and through my own templates, we worked on them together and we job costed everybody's things. Yeah. And we kind of talked to, you know, initially in the field, we're like, okay, every single person who came to this place here said the same couple things. I'm the best. I'm the highest price. People will come to me. They'll pay double because they want quality. When we got done job costing, everybody was like, I'm giving away my work. I'm giving away my work. I could work for somebody else and make more money doing this. Data plus feelings, Tom Drost.
Right.
When they finally came face to face, and these are all good people. These are people that actually track data. But when you do it in a group and you're open and vulnerable like that, I did it to my own company too.
Right.
That is a sneaky insight that not many people get. I did this all over the country. What I took away from that was everybody's giving away their work.
Right.
Every single person. I mean, honestly, most single person painting companies, if they doubled their prices, they still would be backed out 3 to 6 months, give or take. So what I did for back in my company for planning and then for increasing production was, you know what? We're going to increase prices. And we know that, we do that. I thought I had a pretty good read on market rate, but when I started looking at everybody else, I was like, man, there's a big demand out there. And so we started increasing our prices in a real way, which leads into sales planning, because we saw the most dramatic piece of data that I've captured probably in the last 12 months is I brought an estimator on. Everybody knows and loves Estimator Andy, one of the coolest guys on the planet. He came in and doubled my average job size in 12 months. Wow. We went from 3,000 to 6,000 in 12 months. And that was dramatic. And that has everything to do with, again, data plus feelings.
Right.
Yes, we raised our prices. But then there's Andy. Andy is a special human. He is an empathetic, beautiful salesperson.
Yeah.
And he is the least salesy salesperson. So again, you know, when you think about like planning and all this stuff, I would not have planned it that. I would not have said, Andy, you're going to come on and we're going to double our average job size in 1 year. And you're going to not only sell $1 million, you're going to go out there and sell $2 million. That's daunting. But again, with mentoring and coaching and Andy being a good guy, tracking the data and then doing stuff with it. Now, what's interesting is initially in the year, the first 6 months of the year, I gave him a goal of 50% SR, which means I want him to close, you know, 50% of the estimates.
Yeah.
He did a horrible job with that. He only did 35, but he doubled the average job size. So really, in effect, he was doing better than me he was selling less jobs, but they were so much more valuable.
Right.
It was a better number. So again, when you look at SR, when you look at average job size, we talked about the levers before. You lower SR, but if AJS goes up, that's a great thing. That's
huge.
It's just, I love that data because we dwell in feelings, and Andy was beating himself up about that. He's like, God, 35%. I'm horrible at this. I'm like, Andy, you transformed the sales side of this business. You should go into it. Like, this is metal worthy kind of stuff. Like, but when you sprinkle that data on, you know?
Yeah, it's really powerful. It's really powerful, good or bad. It really lets you know where you are.
Yeah. I love it. Matt Houghton on Facebook. We're getting a bunch of compliments on here. Thank you, everybody. We do appreciate it. Matt Houghton, love to talk about humans and client service. My number one message to my employees is don't piss the customers off. It's amazing how little it comes down to the actual painting and the quality of the work. It's really about making people feel heard and respected. Very interesting. One of the things that that Andy and I, we keep a list of things that we believe to be true about sales. And one of them is almost every single question that a client will ask you is not really what they want to ask. They want to go three levels deeper and say, are you going to take advantage of me?
Right.
And it feels like that's, if they could just come out and say that, they could just get to the point what they really want to ask sometimes.
Speed the whole process up so much.
Speed it up, yeah. So, all right. Well, Tom, I think I made a list of stuff that I made sure I wanted to talk to you because you're a special guy with a special insight into the industry. Any last comments, questions, et cetera?
No, I'd just like to say, you know, thank you. That was awesome. And you have great knowledge, and it's great that you share with all the people out in the industry, because it really is important. Getting the help and having these things available to people is really so critical to being able to professionalize yourself.
I'm a huge fan of guys like you too, servant leaders who are willing to open up and actually think about the industry. And everybody I've met in your organization is they truly do. When they talk about doing something with me, doing something with the industry, you guys legitimately want better people out there, and you want to professionalize this because you run a business too. And there's a painful way to do this and a not painful way. And nobody wants anybody to be in the painful side.
That's right. And it is. There's you don't have to be. That's the point.
All right, Tom, thank you so much for this. There's going to be a second edition of this later on in the year, profit planning too. That is going to be exciting because that has, listen, you and I, you're an accountant. I did a little bit of accounting in college, only enough to know that I was grossed out by it and somebody else would do that for me later. But we're going to go deep into profit later on in the year. And at least from my point of view, it has way more to do with the humanistic side of the business than it does the numbers at some point too. So I'll be really interested to get your take on that as well.
Sounds good. I'm looking forward to it.
All right, Tom, thanks again. And thank you everybody for watching. Thank you for the comments. Tom and I and the rest of the team at Estimate Rocket will be on the comment section here. So if you guys have questions later on, this is live, but you don't just get a chance to ask questions live. Hammer away at us. Anything you've ever wanted to know about what we talked about or otherwise, get in there. We will be monitoring. Tom, thank you for this opportunity. This was an awesome conversation.
Yeah, pleasure was mine. Thanks, Nick.
All right, everybody. Have a good day, and we'll see you next week.
PaintEd podcasts are produced by the Painting Contractors Association and is made possible by members and industry partners. To find out more about upcoming education opportunities or for more information about joining PCA, visit pcapainted.org.